unicorns were galloping over the moor, about 200 paces from them. An entire herd, at least 30 head. Ciri had seen unicorns before. Sometimes, particularly at dawn, they came up to the lake at the foot of the Tower of the Swallow. They had never let her approach them, though, but had vanished like ghosts. The leader of the herd was a great stallion with a strange reddish coat. He suddenly stopped, neighed piercingly, and reared up. He trotted on his hind hooves, waving his forehooves in the air in a way that would have been absolutely impossible for any horse. Ciri noted in amazement that Avalach and the three elf women were humming, singing in chorus some strange monotonous tune.
"Who are you?"
She shook her head.
"Who are you?"
The question sounded again in her skull, pounded in her temples. The elves' song suddenly rose a tone in pitch. The ruddy unicorn neighed, and the entire herd answered in kind. The earth trembled as they galloped away. The song of Avalach and the elf women broke off. Ciri saw the knowing one furtively wiping the sweat from his brow. The elf glanced at her out of the corner of his eye, understanding that she had seen.
"Not everything here is as pretty as it looks," he said dryly. "Not everything."
"Are you afraid of unicorns? But they're wise and friendly."
He didn't answer.
"I heard," she went on, "the elves and unicorns loved one another."
He turned his head.
"Then accept," he said coldly, "that what you saw was a lover's tiff."
She didn't ask any more questions. She had enough of her own concerns. The tops of the hills were decorated by cromlechs and dolmens. The sight of them reminded Ciri of the stone near Elender, beside which Yennefer taught her what magic is.
"That was so long ago," she thought. "Ages."
One of the elf women shouted again. Ciri glanced to where she was pointing. Before she had time to note that the herd being led by the ruddy stallion had returned, the second elf woman shouted. She stood up in the stirrups. Another herd emerged from the opposite side, from behind a hill. The unicorn leading it was bluish-grey and dappled. Avalach quickly said a few words. It was the Etlithlon language that Ciri found so difficult. But she understood, particularly since the elf women reached for their bows in unison. Avalach turned his face towards Ciri, and she felt a buzzing growing in her head. It was a buzzing quite similar to what a conch shell emits when pressed to the ear, but much stronger.
"Do not resist," she heard a voice. "Do not fight. I must leap. I must transport you to another place. You are in mortal danger."
A whistle and a long, drawn-out cry reached them from far away, and a moment later the earth shuddered under iron-shod hooves. Riders emerged from behind the hill, an entire troop. The horses were wearing caparisons, the riders crested helmets, and the cloaks around their shoulders fluttered in the gallop. Their vermilion, amaranth crimson colour brought to mind the glow of a fire in the sky illuminated by the blaze of the setting sun. A whistling and a cry. The horsemen raced towards them en masse. Before they had ridden half a furlong, the unicorns had vanished. They disappeared, leaving a cloud of dust behind them. The rider's leader, a black-haired elf, sat on a dark bay stallion as huge as a dragon. It was adorned, like all the horses in the troop, in a caparison embroidered with dragon scales, and wore on its head a truly demonic horned bucranium. Like all the elves, the black-haired one wore beneath his cloak of a myriad shades of red a male shirt made of unbelievably tiny rings, thanks to which it fit his body snugly, like knitted woolen cloth.
"Avalach," he said, saluting.
"Heredin, you owe me a favor. You will pay it back when I demand it."
"I'll pay it back when you demand it."
The black-haired elf dismounted. Avalach also dismounted, gesturing to Ciri to do the same. They walked up the hill between white rocks with peculiar shapes covered in spindle and dwarf shrubs of flowering myrtle. Ciri looked at them. They were of equal height, meaning they were both extremely tall. But Avalach's face was gentle, while the black-haired elf's face brought to mind a bird of prey. Fair and black, she thought. Good and evil. Light and dark.
Zirael, let me introduce you to Eredin Breachlas.
I'm pleased to meet you.
The elf bowed, and Ciri returned the bow, not very gracefully.
How did you know, Avalach asked, that we were in danger?
I had no idea.
The elf scrutinized Ciri.
We patrol the plain, for news has got out that the Wanhorns have become anxious and aggressive. No one knows why. I mean, now I know why. It's because of her, naturally.
Avalach neither confirmed nor denied it. Meanwhile, Ciri countered the black-haired elf's gaze with a haughty expression. For a moment, they looked at each other, neither of them wanting to be the first to look away.
So that's the supposed elder blood, remarked the elf. Eyn Henich here. The inheritance of Shadal and Lara Doran. One isn't inclined to believe it, for it's simply a young Doina, a human female.
Avalach said nothing. His face was motionless and indifferent.
I assume you aren't mistaken, the black-haired elf continued. Why, I take it for granted, for you, as rumor has it, never err. Hidden deep in this creature is the Lara gene. Yes, when one examines her more closely, one can see certain traits testifying to the young one's lineage. She indeed has something in her eyes that brings to mind Lara Doran. Doesn't she, Avalach? Who, if not you, is more entitled to judge?
Avalach didn't speak this time either, but Ciri noticed a faint blush on his pale face. She was very surprised and pondered it.
Summing up, the black-haired elf grimaced, there is something precious, something beautiful in this little Dina female. I see it, and I have the impression I've seen a gold nugget in a pile of compost.
Ciri's eyes flashed furiously. Avalach slowly turned his head.
You talk just like a human, Eredin, he said slowly.
Eredin Breachlas bared his teeth in a smile. Ciri had seen teeth like that before. Very white, very small, and very inhuman, as straight as a die and lacking canines. She'd seen teeth like that on the dead elves lying in a row in the courtyard of the Caedwen Watchtower. She had delighted in teeth like that on Iskra. But the teeth in Iskra's smile looked pretty, while on Eredin, they were ghastly.
Does this lass, he said, who is trying hard to kill me with her stare, already know the reason she's here?
Indeed.
And is prepared to cooperate?
Not completely.
Not completely, he repeated. Ha! That's not good. Since the nature of the cooperation demands that it be complete. It is simply not possible if it's less than complete. And because we are separated from Tir Nalia by half a day's ride, it'd be worth knowing where we stand.
Why be impatient? Avalach pouted his lips slightly. What can we gain by haste?
Eternity.
Eredin Breachlas became serious. Something shone briefly in his green eyes.
But that's your speciality, Avalach. Your speciality and your responsibility.
You have spoken.
Indeed I have. And now, forgive me, for duty calls. I'll leave you an escort for safety. I advise you to overnight here on this hill.
If you set off tomorrow at daybreak, you'll be in Tir na Lea at the right time.
Var fael?
Aha! One more thing.
He leaned over, broke, and then tore off a twig of flowering myrtle. He brought it close to his face, then handed it to Ciri.
My apologies, he said briefly, for the hasty words. Va fael, Llunet.
He walked away quickly, and a moment later the earth shuddered beneath hooves as he rode off with the entire troop.
Just don't tell me, she growled, that I would have to... that it's him. If it's him, then I'll never, ever...
No, Avalach slowly corrected her. It's not him. Be calm.
Ciri brought the myrtle up to her face, in order for him not to see the excitement and fascination that had seized her.
I am calm.
The dry thistles and heather of the steppe were replaced by lush green grass and damp ferns. The marshy ground was yellow and violet with buttercups and lupins. Soon they saw a river, which, although it was crystal clear, had a brown tinge. It smelled of peat. Avalach was playing various lively tunes on his pipes. Ciri, glum, was thinking intensely.
Who, she finally said, is to be the father of the child that matters so much to you? Or perhaps it is of no importance?
It is important. Am I to understand you've made your decision?
No, you aren't. I'm simply clearing up certain matters.
May I help?
What do you want to know?
You know very well what.
They rode on in silence for a time. Ciri saw some swans sailing elegantly down the river.
The child's father,
Avalach spoke calmly and to the point,
will be Auberon Murihertach. Auberon Murihertach is our, how do you say, our highest leader?
King? King of all the E and She?
E and She? The people of the hills are elves of your world. We are Éin Eile, the folk of the Eildar, and Auberon Murihertach is indeed our king.
The Eildar king?
One could call him that.
They rode on in silence. It was very warm.
Avalach?
Yes.
If I agree, then afterwards, later, will I be free?
You'll be free and may go wherever you wish, assuming you don't decide to stay with the child.
She snorted contemptuously, but said nothing.
So you've decided? He asked.
I'll decide when we arrive.
We have arrived.
Ciri saw the palaces from behind the weeping willows, which hung down towards the water like green curtains. She had never seen anything like them in her entire life. The palaces, although built of marble and alabaster, were like fragile bowers. They seemed so delicate, light and airy, as though they weren't buildings but apparitions of buildings. Ciri expected at any moment that the wind would blow and the little palaces would vanish along with the mist rising from the river. But when the wind blew, when the mist vanished, when the willow branches moved and ripples appeared on the river, the little palaces didn't vanish and had no intention of vanishing. They only gained in beauty. Ciri looked in admiration at the little terraces, at the little towers resembling water lilies sticking up from water, at the little bridges suspended over the river like festoons of ivy, at the staircases, steps, balustrades, at the arcades and cloisters, at the peristyles, at the tall and short columns, at the large and small domes, at the slender pinnacles and towers resembling asparagus spears.
Tir na Lea, Avalach said softly.
The closer they went, the more the beauty of the place seized her powerfully by the heart, more powerfully squeezed her throat, making tears well up in the corners of her eyes. Ciri looked at the fountains, at the mosaics and terracotta, and at the sculptures and monuments, at lacy constructions of whose purpose she couldn't conceive, and at constructions she was certain served no purpose, beside aesthetics and harmony.
Tir na Lir, repeated Avalach. Have you ever seen anything like it?
I have.
She felt the pressure on her throat.
I once saw something like this in Shirawith.
Now it was the elf's turn to say nothing for a long while. They crossed over the river on an openwork bridge which seemed so fragile that Kelpie danced and snorted a long time before she was brave enough to step on it. Although agitated and tense, Ciri looked around attentively, not wanting to overlook anything. No sight that the fairy tale city of Tir na Lir offered. Firstly, she was simply consumed by curiosity, and secondly, she couldn't stop thinking about escaping and so looked out watchfully for an opportunity. She saw long-haired elves in close-fitting jerkins and short cloaks embroidered with fanciful leaf-shaped motifs, walking on small bridges and terraces, along avenues and peristyles, on balconies and cloisters. She saw coiffured and provocatively made-up elf women in gauzy dresses or in outfits resembling male costume. Eredin Breachglas greeted them outside the portico of one of the palaces. At his curt order, small, grey-attired elves swarmed around, quickly and silently, taking care of their horses. Ciri looked on, somewhat amazed. Avalach, Eredin, and all the other elves she had met before were extremely tall. She had to crane her neck to look them in the eye. The small grey elves were much shorter than her.
A different race, she thought. A race of servants. Even here in this fairy tale world, there must be someone to do the work for the idol.
They entered the palace. Ciri gasped. She was an infanta of royal blood raised in palaces, but she had never seen such marble and malachite, such stuccos, floors, mosaics, mirrors and candelabras. She felt uncomfortable, awkward in that dazzling interior, out of place, dusty, sweaty and unwashed after her journey. Avalach, quite the opposite, wasn't at all concerned. He brushed his breeches and boots with a glove, ignoring the fact that the dust was settling on a looking glass. Then he tossed his gloves grandly to the grey elf woman bowing before him.
"How, Baron?" he asked curtly. "Is he waiting?"
Eredin smiled.
"Yes, he is in a great hurry. He demanded that the swallow go to him immediately, without a moment's delay. I talked him out of it."
Avalach raised his eyebrows.
"Zirael," Eredin explained very calmly, "ought to go to the king free of cares, unburdened, rested, composed, and in a good mood. A bath, a new outfit, hairstyle and makeup will ensure that good mood. Our Baron will probably be able to hold out that long, I think."
Ciri sighed deeply and looked at the elf. She was positively amazed at how kind he seemed. Eredin smiled, revealing his even teeth.
"Only one thing arouses my reservations," he declared, "and that is the aquiline glint in our swallow's eyes. Our swallow is flashing her eyes left and right, quite like a stoat looking for holes in a cage. The swallow, I see, is still far from unconditional surrender."
Avalach didn't comment. Ciri naturally didn't either.
"I'm not surprised," continued Eredin. "It cannot be any other way, since it's the blood of Shaedal and Laradoran. But listen to me very attentively, Zirael. There is no escape from here. There is no possibility of breaking Gaeas Garath, the spell of the barrier."
Ciri's gaze said clearly that she wouldn't believe it until she had tested it.
"Even if you were by some miracle to force the barrier,
Eredin didn't take his eyes off her. Then know that it would mean your doom. This world only looks pretty, but it carries death, particularly to the inexperienced. Even magic can't heal a wound from a one-horned spike. No, also, he continued, not waiting for a comment, that your wild talent won't help you at all. You won't make the leap, so don't even try. And even if you managed, know that my Derech Ruari, my Red Riders, can catch up with you even in the abyss of times and places. She didn't quite understand what he was talking about, but it puzzled her that Avalach had suddenly become sullen and was frowning, very evidently unhappy about Eredin's speech, as though Eredin had said too much. "Let us go," he said. "Come this way, Thirael. We'll hand you over to the ladies. It's necessary for you to look beautiful. The first impression is most important." Her heart was pounding in her breast. The blood thrummed in her temples. Her hands were shaking a little. She brought them under control by clenching her fists. She calmed herself with the help of deep breaths. She loosened her shoulders and moved her neck, stiff with nervousness. She observed herself once again in the large looking glass. The sight didn't especially please her. Her hair, still damp from bathing, was trimmed and combed, so it at least partly concealed her scar. Her makeup nicely emphasized her eyes and mouth. The silver-grey skirt, slit to halfway up her thigh, and black waistcoat with sheer blouse of pearl crepe looked very presentable. The silk scarf around her neck highlighted it all compellingly. Ciri adjusted and straightened the scarf, then reached between her thighs and adjusted what was necessary. And she had on some truly sensational things beneath the skirt. Panties as delicate as gossamer, and stockings almost reaching the panties, which in some incredible way stayed up without garters. She reached for the handle, hesitantly, as though it wasn't a handle but a sleeping cobra. "Spit," she thought involuntarily in the elven tongue. "I fought against men with swords. I'll take on one man with..." She closed her eyes and sighed, and entered the chamber. There was no one inside. A book and a carafe lay on the malachite table. There were strange reliefs on the walls, which were draped with heavy curtains and flowery tapestries. In one corner stood a statue, in another a four-poster bed. Her heart began to pound again. She swallowed. She saw a movement out of the corner of one eye, not in the chamber, on the terrace. He was sitting there, turned towards her in half profile. Although by now somewhat aware that, among elves, everything looked different to what she was accustomed to, Ciri experienced a slight shock. All the time the king had been talked about, God knows why, she had had in mind Ervil of Verden, whose daughter-in-law she had almost once become. Thinking about that king, she saw a large man, immobilized by rolls of fat, breath sticking of onions and beer, with a red nose and bloodshot eyes visible above an unkempt beard, holding a scepter and orb in his swollen hands flecked with liver spots. But a completely different king was sitting by the balustrade of the terrace. He was very slim, and it was also apparent that he was very tall. His hair was as ashen as hers, shot with snow-white streaks, long and falling down onto his shoulders and back. He was dressed in a black velvet jerkin. He was wearing typical elven boots with numerous buckles running all the way up the leg. His hands were slender and white with long fingers. He was busy blowing bubbles, holding a small bowl of soapy water and a straw which he was blowing through. The iridescent rainbow bubbles floated down towards the river. She cleared her throat softly. King Eildr turned his head. Ciri was unable to suppress a gasp. His eyes were extraordinary, as bright as molten lead, bottomless, and full of unimaginable sadness. "Swallow," he said.
Siriel, thank you for agreeing to come.
She swallowed, not knowing at all what to say. Oberon Murehartach put the straw to his lips and sent another bubble into space. She locked her fingers in order to stop them trembling, cracking her knuckles. Then she nervously combed her hair. The elf was apparently only paying attention to the bubbles.
Are you anxious?
No,
she lied arrogantly.
I'm not.
Are you hurrying somewhere?
Indeed I am.
She must have put a little too much nonchalance into her voice and felt she was balancing on the edge of good manners. But the elf wasn't paying attention. He blew a huge bubble through the end of the straw, making it resemble a cucumber by rocking it. He admired his handiwork for a long time.
Would I be a nuisance if I asked you where you're in such a rush to get to?
Home,
she snapped, but at once corrected herself, adding in a calm tone,
to my world.
To what?
To my world.
Ah, forgive me. I'd have sworn you said, to my quirk. And I was indeed very amazed. You speak our language splendidly, but you could still work on your pronunciation and accent.
Is my accent important? After all, you don't need me for conversation.
Nothing should stop us striving for excellence.
Another bubble sprang up at the end of the straw. When it broke away, it drifted up and burst as it touched a willow branch. Ciri gasped.
So, you're in a hurry to get back to your world,
Oberon Murehartach said a moment later.
To yours? Indeed, you humans aren't overly blessed with humility.
He dipped the straw in the bowl and, with a seemingly careless blow, encircled himself in a swarm of rainbow bubbles.
Humans, he said. Your hirsute forebear on the spear side appeared in the world much later than the hen, and I've never heard of any hens laying claim to the world. Why are you fidgeting and hopping on the spot like a little monkey? What I'm saying ought to interest you. After all, it's history. Ah, let me guess. History doesn't interest you and bores you.
A huge iridescent bubble floated towards the river. Ciri said nothing, biting her lip.
Your hirsute forebear,
the elf continued, stirring the mixture with the straw,
quickly learned how to use his opposable thumb and rudimentary intelligence. With their help, he did various things, usually as amusing as they were woeful. That is, I meant to say, that if the things your forebear did hadn't been woeful, they would have been amusing.
Another bubble, and immediately after, a second and a third.
We, the Aeon Elle, were a little concerned what foolishness your ancestor got up to. We, unlike our cousins, the Aeon She, left that world long ago. We chose another, more interesting universe. For at that time, you'll be astonished by what I say. One could move quite freely between the worlds, with a little talent and skill, naturally. Beyond all doubt, you understand what I have in mind.
Ciri was dying of curiosity, but remained stubbornly silent, aware that the elf was teasing her a little. She didn't want to make his task any easier. Oberon Muirchertach smiled and turned around. He had on a golden necklace, a badge of office called a torch in the elder speech.
Mire, Luned.
He blew softly, moving the straw around nimbly. Instead of one large bubble, as before, several of them hung from the end.
A bubble beside a bubble, and another beside another, he crooned. Oh, that's how it was. That's how it was. We used to say to ourselves, what's the difference? We'll spend some time here, some time there. So what if the Daina insist on destroying their world along with themselves? We'll go somewhere else, to another bubble.
Ciri nodded and licked her lips under his burning gaze. The elf smiled again, shook the bubbles, blew once again, this time creating a single large bunch from a myriad of small bubbles joined to each other at the end of the straw.
The conjunction came.
The elf raised the straw hung with bubbles.
And even more worlds were created. But the door is closed. It is closed to all, apart from a handful of chosen ones. And time is passing. The door ought to be opened. Urgently. It's imperative. Do you understand that word? I'm not stupid. No, you aren't.
He turned his head.
You can't be, for you are Eanhen Icher of the Elder Blood. Come closer.
When he reached out his hand towards her, she clenched her teeth involuntarily. But he only touched her forearm, and then her hand. She felt a pleasant tingling. She dared to look into his extraordinary eyes.
I didn't believe it when they said it, he whispered. But it's true. You have Shyadal's eyes. Lara's eyes.
She lowered her gaze. She felt insecure and foolish. The Elder King rested his elbow on the balustrade and his chin on his hand. For a long time, he seemed only to be interested in the swans swimming in the river.
Thank you for coming, he finally said, without turning his head. And now go away and leave me alone.
She found Avalach on the terrace by the river, just as he was boarding a boat, in the company of a gorgeous elf woman with straw-coloured hair. The elf woman was wearing lipstick the colour of pistachios and flecks of golden glitter on her eyelids and temples. Ciri was about to turn around and walk away when Avalach stopped her with a gesture and invited her into the boat with another. Ciri hesitated. She didn't want to talk in front of witnesses. Avalach said something quickly to the elf woman and blew her a kiss. The elf woman shrugged and went away. She only turned around once to show Ciri with her eyes what she thought of her.
If you could refrain from comment, said Avalach when she sat down on the bench nearest the bow.
He also sat down, took out his pipes and played, utterly unconcerned about the boat. Ciri looked around apprehensively, but the boat was sailing perfectly down the centre of the current, not deviating by even an inch towards the steps, pillars and columns extending into the water. It was a strange boat. Ciri had never seen one like it, even on Skellige, where she had spent a long time examining everything that was capable of floating on the water. It had a very high, slender prow, carved in the shape of a key. It was very long, very narrow, and very unstable. Indeed, only an elf could sit in something like that and play his pipes instead of holding the tiller or the oars. Avalach stopped playing.
"What troubles you?"
He heard her out, watching her with a strange smile.
"You're saddened," he stated rather than asked. "Saddened, disappointed, but above all, indignant."
"Not at all. I'm not."
"And you shouldn't be."
The elf became serious.
"Auberon treated you with reverence, like a born Éin Ethle. Don't forget, we, the elder folk, never hurry. We have time."
"He told me something quite different."
"I know what he told you.
And what it's all about? Do you also know that?"
"Indeed."
She had already learned a great deal. Not by sighing, not even by flickering an eyelid, did she betray her impatience or anger. When once again he put the pipes to his mouth and played, melodiously, longingly, for a long time. The boat glided along, and Ciri counted the bridges passing over their heads.
"We have," he said, right after the fourth bridge, "more than serious grounds to suppose that your world is in danger of destruction by a climactic cataclysm of immense scale. As a scholar, you have certainly encountered Éin Aithlina's Beat, Aithlina's prophecy. There is talk of the white frost in the prophecy. According to us, it concerns extensive glaciation. And because it so happens that 90% of the land of your world is in the northern hemisphere, this glaciation may endanger the existence of most living creatures. They will simply perish from the cold. Those that survive will fall into barbarism, will destroy each other in merciless battles for food, or become prey to predators insane with hunger. Remember the text of the prophecy. The time of contempt, the time of the battle axe, the time of the wolfish blizzard."
Ciri didn't interrupt, fearing he would begin playing again.
"The child that matters so much to us," continued Avalach, fiddling with the pipes, "the descendant and bearer of the Lara Doran gene, the gene that was specially constructed by us, may save the denizens of that world. We have reason to believe that the descendant of Lara, and of you, naturally, will possess abilities 1,000-fold more powerful than that which we, the Knowing Ones, possess, and which you possess in rudimentary form. You know what this is about, don't you?"
Ciri had come to learn that in the Elder Speech, such rhetorical devices, although apparently questions, not only did not demand, but quite simply did not brook a response.
"In short," Avalach continued, "it concerns the possibility of transferring between worlds not only oneself, one's own, indeed, insignificant person. It concerns the opening of Ardgaet, the great and permanent gateway through which everyone would pass. We managed to do it before the conjunction, and we want to achieve it now. We will evacuate from the dying world the Éin Sí residing there, our brothers to whom we owe it to help. We wouldn't be able to live with the thought that we had abandoned anything. And we shall rescue, evacuate from that world, everyone who is in danger. Everyone, Ziraël. Humans, too."
"Really?" She couldn't hold it back. "Dinah, too?"
"Dinah, too. Now you see for yourself how important you are, how much depends on you, how important a thing it is for you to remain patient, how important a thing it is for you to go to Auberon this evening and stay all night. Believe me, his behavior wasn't a demonstration of enmity.
He knows that this isn't an easy matter for you, that he might hurt and discourage you by being importunately hasty. He knows a great deal, O'Swallow. I don't doubt you've noticed.
I have, she snapped. I've also noticed that the current has borne us quite far from Tir na Lir. Time to take up the oars, which I can't see here, as a matter of fact.
Because there aren't any.
Avalach raised an arm, twisted his hand, and snapped his fingers. The boat stopped. It rested for a while in place, and then began to move against the current. The elf made himself more comfortable, put his pipes to his lips, and gave himself over entirely to his music. In the evening, the Eildar King entertained her to supper. When she entered, rustling silk, he invited her to the table with a gesture. There were no servants. He served her himself. The supper consisted of over a dozen kinds of vegetables. There were mushrooms, boiled and simmered in a sauce. Ciri had never eaten mushrooms like them before either. Some of them were as white and thin as dainty leaves, tasted delicate and mild, and others were brown and black, fleshy and aromatic. Alberon was also generous with the rosé wine. Seemingly light, it went to her head, relaxed her, and loosened her tongue. The next thing she knew, she was telling him things she never thought she would. He listened, patiently. And then, when she suddenly remembered why she was there, she turned gloomy and fell silent.
As I understand it.
He served her quite new mushrooms, greenish and smelling of apple pie.
You think that destiny connects you to this Geralt?
Precisely so. She raised a cup, now marked with numerous smudges of lipstick.
Destiny? Geralt, is linked to me by destiny, and I am to him. Our destinies are conjoined, so it would be better if I went away from here, right away. Do you understand? I confess that I don't, quite. Destiny!
She took a sip. A force which it's better not to get in the way of. Which is why I think...
No, thank you. Don't serve me any more, please. I've eaten so much I think I'll burst. You mentioned thinking. I think it was a mistake to lure me here and force me to... Well, you know what I mean. I must get away from here and hurry to help him, because it's my destiny. Destiny!
He interrupted, raising his glass.
Predestination. Something that is inevitable. A mechanism which means that a practically unlimited number of unforeseeable events must end with the same result and no other. Is that right?
Certainly.
Then, whence and wherefore do you wish to go? Drink your wine, enjoy the moment, delight in life. What is to come will come, if it's inevitable.
Like hell, it's not that easy.
You're contradicting yourself. No, I'm not. You're contradicting your contradiction. And that's a vicious circle.
No! She tossed her head. You can't just sit and do nothing. Nothing comes by itself.
Sophistry.
You can't waste time unthinkingly. You might overlook the right moment. That one right, unique moment. For time never repeats itself. Permit me.
He stood up. Look at that. Over there.
On the wall he was pointing at was a protruding relief portraying an immense scaly snake. The reptile, curled up in a figure of eight, was sinking its great teeth into its own tail. Ciri had once seen something like it, but couldn't remember where.
There, said the elf. The ancient snake, Ouroboros. Ouroboros symbolizes eternity and is itself eternal. It is the eternal going away, and the eternal return. It is something that has no beginning and no end. Time is like the ancient Ouroboros. Time is fleeting moments, grains of sand passing through an hourglass. Time is the moments and events we so readily try to measure. But the ancient Ouroboros reminds us that in every moment, in every instant, in every event is hidden the past, the present, and the future. Eternity is hidden in every moment. Every departure is at once a return. Every farewell is a greeting. Every return is a parting. Everything is simultaneously a beginning and an end. And you too, he said, not looking at her at all, are at once the beginning and the end. And because we are discussing destiny, know that it is precisely your destiny to be the beginning and the end. Do you understand? She hesitated for a moment, but his glowing eyes forced her to answer. I do. Get undressed. He said it so casually, so indifferently, she almost yelled in anger. Instead, she began to unfasten her waistcoat with trembling hands. Her fingers were disobedient, the hooks and eyes, little buttons and ribbons, awkward and tight. Though Ciri hurried as much as she could, wanting to get everything over as quickly as possible, the undressing lasted an annoyingly long time. But the elf didn't give the impression of being in a hurry, as though he really had the whole of eternity at his disposal. Who knows, she thought, perhaps he has. Now, completely undressed, she shuffled from foot to foot, the floor chilling her feet. He noticed it and pointed wordlessly to the bed. The bedclothes were made of mink pelts sewn into great sheets, wonderfully soft, warm, and pleasantly ticklish. He lay down beside her, fully dressed, even in his boots. When he touched her, she tensed up, involuntarily, a little angry at herself, for she had decided to act proud and impassive. Her teeth, whether she liked it or not, were chattering somewhat. His touch thrilled her, however, and his fingers taught her and commanded her, guided her. Once she had begun to understand the suggestions so well that she was almost anticipating them, she closed her eyes and imagined it was Missel. But she was unable to, for he was so unlike Missel. He instructed her with his hand. She obeyed, willingly, urgently. He didn't hurry at all. He made her soften beneath his caresses like a silk ribbon. He made her moan, made her bite her lips, made her whole body jerk in a sudden, shocking spasm. What he did then, she hadn't expected at all. He stood up and walked away, leaving her aroused, panting and trembling. He didn't even look back. The blood struck Ciri's face and temples. She curled up in a ball on the mink sheets and sobbed from rage, shame, and humiliation. In the morning, she found Avalach in the peristyle behind the palace, among an avenue of statues. The statues, most peculiarly, portrayed elven children, in various mainly playful poses. The one Avalach was standing by was particularly interesting. It depicted a young elf standing on one leg with its face contorted in anger, fists clenched. Ciri couldn't tear her gaze away for a long time, and she felt a dull ache in her belly. Only when urged by Avalach did she tell him everything, in general terms and stammering. He,
Avalach said gravely after she had finished, has watched the smokes of Samhain more than 600 times. Believe me, Swallow, that is a lot, even for the elder folk.
What do I care? She snapped. I made an agreement. You must have learned from the dwarves, your comrades, what a contract is. I'm keeping my side of it. I'm giving myself. What do I care what he can't or doesn't want to? What do I care if it's senile impotence or if I don't attract him? Perhaps Doina repulse him? Perhaps, like Eridan, he sees only in me a nugget in a heap of compost.
I hope. Avalach's face exceptionally changed and contorted. I hope you didn't say anything like that to him.
No, I didn't, though I felt like it.
Beware. You don't know what you're risking.
It's all the same to me. I entered into a contract, take it or leave it. Either you keep your side of the bargain, or we nullify the contract and I'll be free.
Beware, Azirael, he repeated, pointing at the statue of the upset child. Don't be like this one here. Consider every word. Try to understand. And if you don't understand something, don't act rashly under any circumstances. Be patient. Remember, time means nothing.
Yes, it does.
Please, don't be an unruly child. I repeat again, be patient with Oberon, because he's your only chance of regaining your freedom.
Really? She almost screamed. I'm beginning to have my doubts. I'm beginning to suspect you of cheating me. But you've all cheated me. I promised you.
Avalach's face was as lifeless as a stone statue. You will return to your world. I've given my word. Doubting someone's word is a serious insult to the Aen Etle. In order to keep you from doing it, I suggest we end this conversation.
He was about to go, but she barred his way. His aquamarine eyes narrowed, and Ciri understood she was dealing with a very, very dangerous elf. But it was too late to withdraw.
That's very much in the elven style, she hissed like a viper, to insult someone and then not let them get even.
Beware, O Swallow.
Listen!
She lifted her head proudly.
Your Elder King won't fulfill the task, that's more than clear.
It isn't important if he's the problem or if I am. That's trivial and meaningless. But I want to fulfill the contract and get it over with.
Let someone else impregnate me to beget the child you care so much about.
You don't know what you're talking about.
And if I'm the problem...
She didn't change her tone or expression.
It means you're mistaken, Avalach. You lured the wrong person to this world.
You don't know what you're talking about, Zrael.
If, though, she screamed, you're all repulsed by me, use the henny breather method.
What? Don't you know?
You show the stallion a mare, and then you blindfold it and put the jenny in front of it.
He didn't even deign to reply. He passed her by unceremoniously and walked off along the avenue of statues.
Or you, perhaps? She yelled. If you want, I'll give myself to you. Well, won't you sacrifice yourself? I mean, they say I've got Lara's eyes.
He was in front of her in 2 paces. His hands shot towards her neck like snakes and squeezed like steel pincers. She understood that if he'd wanted to, he could have throttled her like a fledgling. He let her go. He leaned over and looked into her eyes from close up.
Who are you? He asked extremely calmly. To dare to defile her name in such a way. Who are you to dare to abuse me with such miserable charity? Oh, I know. I see who you are. You are not the daughter of Lara. You are the daughter of Creginnon. You are a thoughtless, arrogant, selfish Doina, a simply perfect representative of your race who understands nothing. and must ruin and destroy, besmirch by touch alone, denigrate and defile by thought alone. Your ancestor stole my love from me, took her away from me, selfishly and arrogantly took Lara from me. But I shall not permit you, O his worthy daughter, to take the memory of her from me.
He turned around. Ciri overcame the lump in her throat.
Avalach.
A look.
Forgive me. I behaved thoughtlessly and shabbily. Forgive me. And if you can, forget it.
He went over to her and embraced her.
I've already forgotten, he said warmly. No, let us not return to that ever again.
When she entered the royal chambers that evening, bathed, perfumed and coiffured, Aubron Muirchertach was sitting at the table bent over a chessboard. He instructed her to sit opposite without a word. He won in 9 moves. The second time, she played white, and he won in 11 moves. Only then did he raise his eyes, his extraordinary, clear eyes.
Get undressed, please.
He deserved credit for one thing. He was delicate and didn't hurry at all. When, as before, he got up from the bed and walked away without a word, Ciri accepted it with calm resignation. But she couldn't fall asleep until almost the very break of day. And when the windows brightened from the dawn and she finally fell asleep, she had a very strange dream. Visagota, stooping, was cleaning duckweed from a muskrat trap. Reeds blown by the wind rustled.
I feel guilty, Swallow. It was I who suggested the idea of this insane escapade. I showed you the way to that accursed tower.
Don't reproach yourself, old Raven. Had it not been for the tower, Bonart would have caught me. At least I'm safe here.
You are not safe there.
Visagota straightens up. Behind him, Ciri sees hills, bare and rounded, sticking up from the grass like the bent back of a monster lurking in ambush. A huge boulder is lying on the hill, and 2 figures stand beside it, a woman and girl. The wind yanks and tugs the woman's black hair. The horizon blazes with lightning.
Chaos extends a hand towards you, daughter, O child of the elder blood, O girl entangled in movement and change, destruction and rebirth, both destined and destiny. From behind a closed door, chaos holds its talons out to you, not knowing yet if you will become its tool or a hindrance in its plans. Not knowing if you will by chance play the role of a grain of sand in the works of the clock of destiny. Chaos fears you, O child of destiny, and wants to make you feel fear, which is why it sends you dreams.
Visagota stoops and cleans the muskrat trap.
But he's dead, Ciri thinks clear-headedly. Does that mean that in the spirit world, the dead have to clean muskrat traps?
Visagota straightens up. The sky burns with a glow of fires behind his back. Thousands of horsemen gallop across the plain. Horsemen in red cloaks. Der Ruari.
Listen to me carefully, Swallow. The elder blood you have in your veins gives you great power. You are the master of places and times. You have a mighty power. Don't let criminals and rogues take it from you and use it for dishonorable purposes. Defend yourself. flee out of the reach of their vile hands.
That's easy to see. They've ensnared me with some kind of magical barrier or tether.
You are the master of places and times. You cannot be tethered.
Visigoth